This is The Guardian.
Hello, Grace Dent here with news. I've been cooking up fresh episodes of my podcast, Comfort Eating, and they are now ready to be devoured. Chock full of chat and brimming with autumn cheer. Join me as I talk to the likes of Stanley Tucci, Vanessa Feltz, Richard E. Grant and Rag & Bone Man about life, love and the grub that has seen them through. New episodes every Tuesday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm also not interested in some dystopian future where I wander around kind of involuntarily jabbing unemployed people who are overweight. That is not the agenda.
Fiscal rules have changed. The first rule has changed to allow a greater priority for long-term capital investment.
We are here today because we share a core belief that we must put country before party.
It is genocide against our people. Give us our land back. Give us what you stole from us.
I'm Pippa Carrera.
And I'm Kieran Stacey.
You're listening to Politics Weekly Westminster for The Guardian.
Pippa, we're nearly there. It's nearly budget week itself. As one fellow journalist in Westminster said to me the other day, I think you're the only person who genuinely gets excited for budgets. But I am. And we are starting to see, I think, a bit of a pivot in the budget messaging from the doom and gloom of these are all the taxes we're going to raise to actually these are the things that we're going to pay for. So we had a bit over the Sunday and particularly into today's newspapers from Wes Streeting on the plan for the NHS. You were writing that up. What is his plan?
Well, I think you're right, Kieran. They finally got there, realised that if they're going to inflict all this pain on all of us through our taxes, through cuts to public sector services, they need to be able to explain what it's all for. You know, why is it worth it in order to keep the public on board? And they haven't done a brilliant job so far of doing that. So I think there's been a very clear decision to try and get us all to write and talk and think about some of the benefits of the changes that they're going to announce in the budget, rather than on all the much more negative side of, you know, the financial pain, the doom and gloom. I mean, I think that there is one school of thought that they probably could have done some of that sooner. We saw the beginnings of that pivot during Keir Starmer's party conference speech. When he started saying, look, we know it's going to be difficult, there are tough choices, there will still be tough choices ahead, but stick with us longer term and the country will look like will be a better place and will work better for you. We just haven't heard much of it since then. And actually, Keir Starmer is out this morning talking with Wes Streeting at a health centre in East London about their plans for the NHS. This morning, they're launching this big public consultation. They want to hear from people like you and me. Actually, no, probably they don't want to hear from people like you and me. They want to hear from voters, from experts, from people that work in the NHS about what they think Labour's 10-year plan for the NHS should look like. And they're being so strict about the focus on health only, on the NHS, and not on any of the other issues that we might want to ask them about, that when our lobby colleague, our political correspondent from The Guardian turned up at the event this morning, she was met with a sort of a rather, you know, I'm not sure whether it was a frown or a stare, but anyway, they weren't very happy to see her because they'd invited along health correspondents, which feels a little bit like uncomfortable media management to me.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, on to the issue of substance, which is, of course, that they are announcing this big 10-year plan for the NHS next spring, not immediately, but we're all going to be asked to feed into it. And there's three kind of shifts in emphasis that they're keen to get across during this whole sort of long-term strategy. One of them is analog to digital. So I guess the catch-all, the easy example of that is patient passports, all your medical records being in one place so that you can go to the GP, the chemist, ambulance service, hospitals, and they'll be able to access it, as will you on the NHS app. The second is healthcare to community. So rather than everyone being reliant on traipsing miles to a hospital or struggling to get appointments with physios or any of the kind of sort of like the add-on health support, they want to have more neighbourhood health hubs, which, yes, you can see your GP at, but you can also pick up your prescription, you can get maternity services. You know, some of this exists already. This is not, you know, they're not sort of reinventing the wheel on that, but they want to see it sort of spread out a lot more widely. And the third element, after analogue to digital and healthcare to community, is sickness to prevention. And we heard a lot of this from Wes Streeting about the costs to the NHS of things like children's dental care, which ends up, you know, kids in hospital having to get their teeth removed and having long-term treatment plans, when actually, if there was better prevention in the first place, more toothbrushing in schools, getting in to see dentists, creating more dentists so they could, then you could help cut down on some of those longer term costs to the NHS.
One of the things that I think makes Wes Streeting so interesting, and maybe this is just because I'm a journalist, is that he is willing to have an argument. He doesn't shy away from them. And if he kind of thinks he's right on something, he really pushes it. So in each of those three things that you mentioned, there are potential political fights to be had, right? So analog to digital, who is it that's going to be brought in to manage these patient passports? Is it going to be Palantir, the very obvious company that can do that kind of work, but is controversial for some of the work it's done in other places? And lots of people are concerned about the amount of data they already hold on everyday voters. Healthcare to community is, you know, an absolute classic fight that's been going on for years and years and years. And Lord Darcy was involved in this fight, you know, 15, 16 years ago.
Lord Darcy, who wrote the big report for them on the state of the NHS a couple of weeks ago.
And his idea was to get polyclinics all over the place. But of course, that means shutting down some big hospital, you know, units or some of the things that are done in big hospitals. And that's always controversial. And then going from sickness to prevention, well, we see what kind of thing that might mean when Wes Streeting comes out and he talks about giving Ozempic jabs to the unemployed, which is kind of slightly off message, actually. But, you know, he is willing to kind of pursue these ideas and have the fights if they're needed.
Yeah.
That is one of the things that I think makes the NHS a really interesting area to watch.
He was on the broadcast round yesterday and it was quite funny. He was asked by quite a few of the presenters about his comments on unemployed people who are overweight being given the weight loss jab to get them back into work, which made sort of there was a bit of a song and dance about it earlier last week.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, well, I should probably clarify. I don't have some vision of, you know, some dystopian future when I'm running down the street jabbing people with this jab. So he does have that ability to cast things in a very human way, and to kind of not just talkers, as we call them in our industry, but also, you know, deploy a bit of humour, which I think helps. But just to pick on one of the areas that you mentioned there about who would be responsible for providing this patient passport, which exists in all sorts of countries around Europe. I had a reader email in this morning telling me that it's existed in Portugal for 10 years and things are much more seamless there. And I'm sure that Portugal is not alone. But obviously there's a bit of anxiety about people that, yes, the government says that it could speed up medical tests and care and, you know, minimise medication errors and things like that. That's obviously the benefits of having all your data in one place. But the fear is, of course, that even if it's anonymised, there's going to be some way the hackers could get into it. Mm. We're not used to having such sensitive information in a sort of secure digital location. And I think that for people is going to take quite a lot of convincing for some people. Wes Streeting wrote in The Guardian this morning, reassuring people, trying to allay patients' fears over that sort of big brother oversight of private records and reassuring them that their information would be protected and anonymised.
Yeah. All right. So that's the kind of good news, as it were, that the government's starting to roll out ahead of the budget. There's plenty of other briefings going on as well. We're now told there are around £35 billion worth of tax rises that are expected to fill this £40 billion black hole that Rachel Reeves now talks about. Possibly a few billions a year off the welfare budget, which will be very difficult for Labour to sell, given the row over the winter fuel allowance. And we're starting to see what exactly in which areas the government might raise taxes. So we're talking about national insurance contributions. There was a lot of briefing about inheritance tax in the Sunday papers. My favourite detail of this, by the way, was in one of the papers went into quite some detail about what exactly Rachel Reeves was going to go after in terms of inheritance tax exemptions, and particularly is looking at land, because a lot of people store value in land and this is subject to various exemptions from inheritance tax. One of the people who apparently does this a lot, has millions and millions of pounds wrapped up in land value, is James Dyson, the Conservative donor and Brexit campaigner. And so it was obviously briefed quite heavily that this was somebody who was going to be targeted by Labour's tax raid, Labour's James Dyson tax. But, you know, I think we're really starting to see now that this is going to be probably, I would say, the most consequential budget of modern political history.
Well, I think it's certainly the case that, and given that you love budgets, Kieran, I'm not surprised to hear you sound so upbeat about the prospect of finding out exactly what they're doing. But I do agree that it is more consequential than most budgets, because it is, you know, the pendulum of British politics swings back and forth between the two main political parties, at least it has in recent decades. And this is the first budget that this incoming Labour administration budget and one-year spending review will be delivering. So not only will we start to hear their prescription or get a fleshed-out prescription for some of the country's problems, which they've obviously talked a lot about since taking over back in July, you know, we'll get the detail on that. But we'll also, as importantly, get a sort of an idea of what this government is going to look like over the next 5 years, but also, if they manage to deliver for people, potentially over the next decade, and therefore what the country looks like. We'll start to see what their priorities are amongst all the difficult financial choices. Which areas will Rachel Reeves choose to protect? We already know, Wes Streeting has said that they've reached a deal, that the NHS and their health will get a settlement that he believes he can work with. We know that the Ministry of Justice, for example, is one of those areas that there's been a lot of concern about. The Secretary of State, Shabana Mahmood, was one of those who wrote to Keir Starmer last week arguing for her department to be more protected. And in private conversations I've had around the Treasury and around Whitehall, there is an acknowledgement that because of the state of prisons and the state of the court system, that the Ministry of Justice will find further cuts really, really difficult. So it will be interesting to see what Reeves does about that. Also, local councils. This is something that Labour politicians for years have criticised. The fact that council budgets have been cut by as much as 60% across the board since 2010. Now is their opportunity actually to do something about it. Will they? Can they? Do they have the money to? That's the big question. And then the last thing is, we've written a lot and heard a lot about tax cuts and benefit cuts and departmental cuts. But we also know that Rachel Reeves' main ambition for the country is growth. Now, you don't get that through cuts, right? You get that through investment. So as we've written before, we expect them to tweak the way that debt is calculated in those borrowing rules. So they'll be able to have billions of pounds more to invest. Where does that money go? These are all the questions that we won't know the answers to until the budget. And from that point of view, I agree with you that it is incredibly consequential.
I think that's true. And one of the reasons I do love budgets is because budgets are essentially moments where you have to make a choice, as you say. And it's the point at which Labour's rhetoric, which has kind of been a bit all over the place, trying to please everybody with everything, you know, low taxes, pro-growth, pro-public spending, everything. They wanted to be everything to all people. That then, you know, becomes crystallised on one particular day where the Chancellor gets up and tells us what her actual decisions and what her priorities are. So, for example, where you're talking about growth, yes, I accept that argument about, well, they're going to prioritise capital spending. But at the same time, it looks like they're going to put employer national insurance contributions up, whether that's on pension contributions or more generally. That's not a pro-growth measure. That is unlikely to help businesses, you know, invest and even, you know, pay their employees more. I think that what we are starting to see with what's been briefed out from this budget is, yes, growth is important, but actually what's more important to this government is repairing public services.
Fixing the foundations, as Keir Starmer puts it.
And they say that that is necessary to get growth going. But of course, you could do a bunch of stuff that's more obviously pro-growth. You could slash business taxes. You know, you could, they've talked about cutting red tape, but actually the biggest change they've made to business regulations since coming into power is to put more regulations in on employment. So there's a bunch of stuff they're doing, which you might argue are absolutely necessary, but I don't think you could say they are purely pro-growth. They're much more about, we've got to fix, as you say, fix public services.
Yeah, but how much of that is because you can't actually get the sort of sustainable growth that they want to get for the long term unless public services, the foundations are fixed?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely Labour's argument. But we were told that the priority would be capital spending, which is why these changes to the debt rule that we've talked about before are likely to come in. you don't necessarily have to increase day-to-day departmental spending by as much as they're talking about to do that. They're talking about now 2% for most departments, and then that's above inflation rises in spending over this parliament. And for the NHS, no wonder Wes Streeting is happy. He's getting 4% above inflation. Now, there are still people who say that's not enough. Maybe, but at the same time, our taxes are going to go up to near record levels to help pay for that. So, you know, I just think that, yes, maybe it's an argument about growth, but just more fundamentally, we are starting to see the shape that this Labour government is taking. And so far, it's going to be higher taxes and higher public spending.
And not everyone is entirely happy about that. You mentioned the 2% above inflation that departments are getting. We've already talked about the Ministry of Justice and councils, which come under Angela Rayner's department. There's also transport, of course. And yeah. Lou Hague, the Transport Secretary, was another of those ministers that we know wrote to Keir Starmer last week to make the case for her department. Now, you know, the sort of the government line, the official government line is, oh, this is all part a normal part of the pre-budget process. Ministers put in bids for their departments and you know, there's sort of a deal thrashed out and they settle somewhere in the middle and everyone can just about live with it. But this is the first time that some of these ministers have been through that process. And I think many of them are feeling it incredibly personally, particularly because, you know, there's so much that they want to do and they came into government promising so much and they've recognised now that actually they are going to be curtailed, they are going to be restricted. And Rachel Reeves obviously gets that.
Yeah.
But I think some of them are going through the quite painful learning process that sounds obvious, but this isn't as easy as it might otherwise have been in different economic circumstances. And those choices, you don't, if you say they're tough, that's one thing, but they actually really are tough.
To make them, yeah. Well, I mean, let me give you two specific points on that. One is that some of these ministers who've complained about the spending review process are particularly upset about this idea that, you know, we're all getting told that the debt rule is going to change over the 5-year period so that there can be more capital spending. But at the same time, they're being told to fix this more immediate black hole this year. They have to make capital spending cuts. So they've got this very difficult joint message to sell.
Really.
Very counterintuitive. Mm. Investment cuts in the short term, but hopefully spending increases on infrastructure in the longer term. And there are cabinet ministers who say to me, this just makes no sense as a message. How am I supposed to go out and sell this to the public? We're all over the place on that. The other specific thing, and this is where you start to see the choices that get made. We're learning this morning that the Treasury has agreed to a top-up to the Affordable Homes Programme, which runs out in 2026. Now, Angela Rayner, as we revealed last week in The Guardian, had been asking for something around £2 billion and was lobbying very hard to get that out to the Treasury. Some agreement has been reached, I'm told, very late on in the day. But I'm also told it'll be way less than £2 billion. In fact, less than the £1 billion that some have been reporting this morning. So, you know, these are the kind of choices you make. You can talk all you like about a big boost to social homes as part of your 1.5 million homes over the Parliament promise. But if the money's not there, you're not going to do it.
Yeah. And in the meantime, Rachel Reeves is taking a break from her spreadsheets on which department gets what and is flying to the US for meetings at the International Monetary Fund with a whole load of finance ministers from across the globe. And she'll be accompanied by our colleague Philip Inman, who will be obviously reporting for us what is going on in the ground in Washington. But Rachel Reeves won't be the only Labour politician, or Labour person, I should say, in the States at the moment. There's a delegation of 100 current and former Labour staffers who have been encouraged to go to the States to knock on doors for Kamala Harris ahead of the US election on November the 5th. There's some MPs have been out there as well to help out. And there was a bit of a row over this when the Labour's head of operations put out a message on LinkedIn, I think it was, which then ended up on Twitter. And Elon Musk himself, who, as we know, is supporting Donald Trump, the Republican candidate, retweeted it and suggested that it was illegal if Labour staffers were being paid to volunteer. Now, this is not a new thing. This is, despite what Elon Musk says, I can't think of a US election in the last couple of decades where, at midterms and presidential elections, and even some big governor races, where British Labour politicians and supporters haven't gone out to support the Dems, who they see as being their sister party. And I can think as recently as the Democrat National Convention in the summer, Morgan McSweeney, now Keir Starmer's Chief of Staff, and Matthew Doyle, the Communications Director, were among those, I think actually they used their holiday for it, but were among those to be there to see up close what is happening in Democrat politics.
I think you could probably say for Morgan McSweeney and Matthew Doyle, that was fact finding. So, you know, help them in their jobs here. I think it's less easy to say that for anybody going out doing campaigning and knocking on doors. You're right. It has always been the case that people have gone and knocked on doors, not only from Labour. I would say there are plenty of Tories used to go out and help the Dems as well, but relatively few to help the Republicans, which just shows how our politics is different from that in America, I think. A lot of those people around David Cameron were strong Barack Obama supporters, for example. What I don't remember, you may remember this better than I do, but I can't remember it ever being as official as this. No. I don't think you're supposed to kind of put a message out there saying, hey, look, if you want to go out there and do something that's not your day job, that's fine by us.
I think the key thing is we didn't know, because it's only really since 2010 that we've had sort of the social media presence and access that we have. So it may well have been that Labour's head of operations pre-2010 was doing exactly this, but was doing it in a much more private capacity and, you know, getting the troops out there. Whereas now it's there for all to see, and indeed there for Elon Musk to see. And we wouldn't have been in a position where Elon Musk was able to share those messages with his 200 million plus followers on Twitter.
So Rachel Reeves is off the week before the budget. So is Keir Starmer. He's going to Samoa for what we thought originally might be quite a jolly and what was supposed to be a kind of 8-day trip.
Packing snorkeling gear.
That's right. Down to Samoa and Australia and possibly New Zealand. But bits of that have been lopped off. And he's now got a kind of 36-hour trip to Samoa, I think, for the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting. I can't imagine, as Prime Minister, you'd be delighted to be doing that the week before
Not
budget.
Not when there's so much going on here, but I think that's why the trip has been curtailed, because it was supposed to be a much longer trip taking in Australia and New Zealand, 8 days or so he's away for, with, again, we're sending our Guardian correspondent, Eleni Kuria, with him to bring us all the latest news on that. But Prime Ministers always go to the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting. King Charles, of course, is already on his way, and you'll have seen him in Australia, where he has been heckled by an independent Indigenous senator. So already this is proving to be quite a newsworthy tour for the King. And the government, the UK government, will view it as an important opportunity to do more of that sort of resetting of relationships, which we've heard so much from Keir Starmer, including India, many of the African nations, and indeed the Caribbean nations. There's one big event at this CHOGM summit, which we haven't had for years, which is the election of a new Secretary General to replace Patricia Scotland, who's a former Labour cabinet minister from the Blair era, who she's been in post since 2016. And interestingly, Kieran, all three candidates to succeed her in that role have called for reparations for countries that were affected by slavery and colonialism. So although this isn't an issue on the agenda at the summit, it's very much being talked about in the margins. And it wouldn't surprise me if Keir Starmer will be asked about that and asked for the British government's views.
Every so often you get a little glimpse, don't you, of what it is to be Prime Minister, juggling spending review, budget, and then demands for reparations for slavery, on the other hand, all within the space of a few days. Not sure I'd want the job.
Tough job. Anyway, that's all from us. So please like and follow Politics Weekly UK to make sure you keep getting our episodes in your feed. John Harris is back on Thursday from Birmingham, where he'll be spending a day looking at the sharp end of council cuts. This episode was produced by Frankie Toby, music by Axel Cocoutier, and the executive producer is Maz Ebtahaj. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Hi there, Jonathan Friedland here, columnist at The Guardian and host of our Politics Weekly America podcast. I want to ask for your help. Guardian podcasts depend on the support of you, our listeners, to help fund coverage, especially in years like this one. We don't have a billionaire owner or shareholders holding the purse strings, which is how we stay independent. To support The Guardian, just click the link in the episode description. And once again, thank you.
This is The Guardian.
Hello, Grace Dent here with news. I've been cooking up fresh episodes of my podcast, Comfort Eating, and they are now ready to be devoured. Chock full of chat and brimming with autumn cheer. Join me as I talk to the likes of Stanley Tucci, Vanessa Feltz, Richard E. Grant and Rag & Bone Man about life, love and the grub that has seen them through. New episodes every Tuesday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.